Okay, it's time to get started. It sounds really loud. It's not? Okay, it sounds really loud. Okay, I'll try to just talk normal. Welcome to the DB module on death and rebirth, and we're going to have a blast. Nothing like a topic of death to kind of thin out the DB crowd, you know? It's like a little thinner today than other days, but this is really, it can be a lot of fun. So we're going to talk about how we're going to have an interesting and exciting adventure on this topic. Is anybody here for the first time? It's fine if you are, but any newcomers to DB in general or the Kadampa Center? Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about discovering Buddhism, but we have these different modules on different topics, and this is about, I think, the fifth. These are the different modules. And so they're meant to stand alone or complement each other. It's obviously ideal if you kind of go through all of them, but certainly we'll be reviewing things that'll make this understandable. I got tons of notes because, you know, you've heard of, during all the election last year and everything, you heard all about the 99%, the 1%, the 47%. Well, we are the 100% because I hate to break it to you, but, you know, we all are going to die. So this is 100%. It's the great equalizer. And we cannot, you know, avoid that. So we might as well, like, dig in and talk about it in a way that transforms the ways that we and our culture usually think about this topic. And that's the good news, is that everything in Buddhism is meant to be liberating and transforming. So if you leave and you're thinking about this topic later on, or you're doing some of the meditations on it, and you find yourself being filled with fear, then you know, oh, there's some way that you are not using the teachings correctly, because it's meant to be liberating and uplifting and transforming. And sometimes we have to work our way through to get to that point. And that's what this module is all about. So just remember that that's the end goal. And we may have to wade through some crap to get there. But that's the end goal. So if you start to feel something else, then no, you just got to kind of check it. I would love it if people can use this book. This is always the kind of the tricky thing in DB is, you know, which readings and how many people are going to read them. This is a book. It may look different out in the bookstore. It's His Holiness's book called Advice on Dying. But there is in the bookstore, there's a section of books just that His Holiness has written. And so you should be able to find it there. It's translated and edited by Jeffrey Hopkins. It's Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life. So don't forget the and part. All right? And even if the first time through you're in class when we're talking about it, some of it's like, well, I don't really know that. Yeah, I can promise you you're not going to regret buying this because I refer back to it over and over and over again. And what he does is he takes a poem by the Panchen Lama that talks about the different stages of dying, and we're going to get to that in the later sessions, what the actual disillusion, what they call the disillusion stages are in dying and how you can use those and familiarize yourself with them. And why would you do that? Why would you do that? That's what this book is all about. And if you have it or you're going to be using it, at the end of the class, I'd kind of like to know who thinks they're going to use this, who is going to use the, who has the CD and is going to use some of those readings, because there's a way that we can try to take the people who are reading one thing and share the knowledge with the people who are reading the other thing. So I'm going to brainstorm and try to be creative about that later today. Eventually, I didn't get the email in time today, but there will be a link for those of you in the class who don't have the CD. The CD has all the readings for all the DB modules, and I really encourage you to buy it. I think it's only like $10 or $20. Yeah, $20. It's packed with readings, and it will have the required readings for this. So I encourage you to do that. If that's too pricey for you, then I'm eventually going to have a link that just the people in this class can access so that you can get the readings. Okay, so one way or another, there'll be readings, and they'll supplement because we only have, you know, an hour and a half each time, so it's really important to try to keep your mind on this topic when we're not here for this hour and a half. So that's my pitch about that. If you are, and I hope you are, some of you are, working your way towards a certification so that you can be sitting here, then you do need to let me sign some paper at the very end that shows that you've come to all the classes or you've made up a class, and all of you will get to have the joy of taking a test at the end. And it's going to be, if you've been in the DV classes that I've led before, the tests are easy. You're not going to fail. I can promise you, you're not going to fail. But that what happens is then you walk out with this piece of paper that is a review of the class, you know, that's graded, and you can refer back to it like I do before I'm leading this class. There'll be some kind of test. I haven't exactly figured out what it is yet. But my goal is that at the end of this module, you will have an especially clear understanding of the disillusioned states and understand how to meditate on the death process so that it's not a frightening process. And you can really understand what that involves and why you would do it and why does His Holiness do that meditation 6 times every day. And I do it on the weekends. But, you know, we'll talk. That's one of my goals for this class. And I would really hope that you actually feel inspired enough to memorize that process, because it's not that hard to memorize. And then you can just do that meditation anytime you want. You won't have to listen to any tape. Okay, and the final little pitch I have to make, or want to make, is about donations for this. So we are one of the very few centers in the country that do not charge for any kind of classes like this. Nobody's taking your money or making you pay for things where, you know, you look around on the internet, it's pretty pricey. So what we do rely on are donations from people. So on your own, think about, you know, what this is worth to you or what you can afford and what you would be paying if you were taking it somewhere else. And there are donation boxes all out there in the lobby. You know, you can put on the bottom of your little check, DB, and then my name, because then I get credit for it, and I get a free trip to Hawaii if I earn 100 points. No. But I think it will help them if they know that it came from the DB class. So if you make a donation, you can just put DB on there, and they'll know that I did my pitch, and you were really pleased with what happened here, and you made your donation. But seriously, think about it. So now let's take a minute to just close our eyes and meditate and relax before we start really getting into this topic. So check your posture, remembering the importance of your back being as straight as possible. If you're sitting in a chair, then have your feet flat on the floor. And your chin should be tucked down just a little bit so that the back of the neck is straight. Place your tongue, the back of your teeth. And if you would like, place your right hand in your left hand with your thumbs just gently touching right at the area in front of your navel, a little below your navel. Arms out away from your body. Gently close your eyes or leave them open a little bit so the light can keep you alert and awake. And then put all of your awareness on your breath. What it feels like to breathe in, what it feels like to breathe out. And just let all the busyness and conversations and thoughts and traffic and work just disappear from your mind. Just let it go. And when your mind wanders, bring it back to your breath. You can count your breaths, if that helps. Count up to 3 or 10, and then start again. Just take a couple of minutes to do that. And take a minute to set your intention. Think about why you're here. The energy it took to get here, to make this commitment to come tonight. Try to raise your intention. So for me, I think like this. I'm here to transform my thoughts about death and rebirth. I'm here to work with my fear and transform these thoughts and worries and fears so that I can have a good life and a good death. So that I can have good future lives because I had a good life and a good death. I can transform my thoughts so that I can have good future lives and escape samsara. I can transform my thoughts, escape samsara, and help others have a good life and a good death and good future lives and escape samsara. So with all of these intentions, I bring my awareness to this class in this moment. Okay, and then just open your eyes when you're ready. Okay, so these are the topics in all the DB in the DB whole journey. Starts with the mind and its potential, then how to meditate, presenting the path. These are all the ones that have been taught already this cycle, the spiritual teacher, and then here we are, death and rebirth. And then it goes on to karma, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Excuse me? Last time around. I mean, all of these keep going, just like samsara. Oh, my goodness, this blew my whole thing. Why did they do those out of order? Well, okay, let's go back to my original point, which was, why do you think originally this is fifth? Why isn't this somewhere towards what looks like the end? You know, why is death and rebirth so early in this whole module? And why, you know, if you look at the Lam Rim, it's also fairly early in the list of topics. Any ideas about that? Oh, okay, there you go. Why would it get, she said it gives you incentive. I'm going to be repeating what people say because I've gotten feedback that the folks watching at home, and I guess there are, don't know what in the world people are saying out there in audience land. So she said it would give you incentive to continue with the rest. And why is that true? What, how would that help you to have... Okay, like a splash of water in your face, right? Okay, and it's good. It helps your motivation? Okay, because the clock is ticking? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, fear can be positive. If it wasn't positive, I mean, there's also the downside of fear, but there is positive fear, and fear is one of the requirements and causes of refuge. And it's also one of the causes of being a good driver. So, like, if you screw up and you drink and drive and they catch you and you haven't killed somebody, then you get sent to a special class, right? It's a DB class for driving. And they scare the hell out of you, right? First, they show you all these films about what's going to happen if you keep messing up, and they might take away your license for a while and make life miserable for you. And, you know, they're trying to put some water in your face and wake you up so that when you're driving, you'll have that little, like, you know, feeling. Or if you're driving, I know this has happened to me, on road trips sometimes, and you get kind of tired at the wheel, and that'll wake you up, right? All of a sudden, you get that jolt of adrenaline because that knowing that you can just go over or off into the ditch, that will keep you awake. So that fear is what's keeping me awake. It's not like, oh, gee, I can't wait to get to the hotel. You know, it's not that that's keeping me awake. It's the fear that I might crash. So like that, we can use our fear. And I think also like that, it can help us with the rest of the lessons, with the rest of the journey. we have to, but it can also be depressing. So we have to kind of balance that and make sure that we're kind of sitting right in the middle of that, just like you would if, just like the way that you would use it if you were driving. Just continue to think like that. But what's really important, I think, is that the very first class is on mind and its potential, because none of it makes sense. If we haven't understood the continuity of mind and the power of mind and its potential. And it's really critical in this topic when we're talking about rebirth then, because we're not talking about death as an end. We're talking about death as a process that we're all nervous about for a good reason. We're also nervous about sharks and snakes and things like that for a good reason. It keeps us alive. But too much fear, you know, we just shut it off. We don't look at it. We don't master it. And then it's too late. So remembering that death is not an end, but it is part of this process that we can learn about. So I had to take all these tests for getting this seat here. And there was this really interesting question on the test that I took, because it was way out. I took all these before. It was really a DB class, and so then they wanted to make sure I really knew this stuff, so I had to take these tests. And one of the questions, which I won't make you all take, but is, pretend you're writing an editorial for the paper and you're trying to convince people about rebirth. And, you know, you have to write a newspaper article for the general public and convince them of rebirth. And I think the reason to do that is because we really need to convince ourselves over and over again that consciousness continues, because we're so sitting in our consciousness with a name on it and a clock ticking that it's very hard for us really to have this deep conviction faith that consciousness continues. And so I'll tell you what I wrote and then see if you all have anything similar to that. What I wrote was, I don't know how many of you have been in New York City, but some of the, you know, these huge buildings, and you can look down one block and you can see a block's worth of the river, the Hudson or East River. You just see this much worth of river. And so I said, that's my kind of analogy of this life, is I can see, if consciousness is a river, I'm looking at this much of the river, and I'm very aware that there's that much river. If I didn't know, if I hadn't gone up to down all the way to whatever street that is, and looked at the whole river, I would just think that maybe, I might just grow up thinking that's just a block of water down there, right? But because I'd already been there, I knew it's a river. But how could I, sitting in that block, convince myself that that was actually more and not just a block's worth of water? What would convince me of that? Well, I might see a boat go by, right? I might see that there's the current. I might notice the current. There's lots of things that could give me that kind of conviction faith that there's more to that river than just that. And I might have to remind myself of that over and over again. Maybe I could go up into one of those tall buildings and look down, you know, have a little out of New York experience. But it would be really critical for me to know that that's an entire river. And so like that, we need to meditate on the continuity of consciousness, because again, it's very hard for us to really get that sitting on the block in New York where we are. Any other analogies that you can think of that give you that kind of conviction faith that consciousness is not just this right here, that there's a continuity of consciousness? I know His Holiness has talked about people he's met, you know, little kids who can remember past lives, right? Not children growing up necessarily believing in that, just children who are talking about, you know, that's their mom over there or something like that. So I think that's pretty interesting. Something else I know that, I can't remember who, maybe it was Ashley was talking to me about this, is, you know, that all things that we can think of come together, and all things that come together go apart. Now, you can, just like this class, right? We all came from wherever we came from. We came together. We can now be called a class. We now hold the label of class. Before 7 o'clock, when we were all doing other things, we couldn't be labeled class. I mean, class was coming. Now class is here. Class is going to end, I can promise you. But that doesn't mean that it ends. First of all, because we've got another one coming up. But second of all, because this class, you'll be carrying this class with you. Hopefully. You have memories, and even if you didn't, it would still impact your consciousness in some way. So things come together, they go apart, but that doesn't mean that, when they go apart, that they weren't impacted by coming together. Every hello has a goodbye. Everything that comes together goes apart. Does that sound gloomy or pretty good? I think the thing to remember is that there's an impact, that they have an impact. I don't want to get ahead of myself. And it's helpful in that coming together then to know that it ends. First of all, so that, you know, well, just on the mundane level that we know, okay, at 8:30 we're going to end and I can go home and eat, you know. So it helps to know that. But it also helps, like, for example, if you know that test is coming up, you're going to pay a whole lot more attention. So you can think of death as like your test. Yeah, test is coming up. I really better pay attention and take notes and practice because test is coming. It's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of thing. So I'm from New Orleans, and I used to drive there, man, like 3 or 4 times a year. So when I set out for New Orleans, 99% of my trip, I am not in New Orleans, right? I am not even seeing New Orleans. But should I really be surprised when I start to see New Orleans in my sight? You know, I start seeing the buildings and the Superdome, and, you know, I shouldn't be so shocked. But we are kind of shocked when we start seeing, like, death approaching. It's like, oh, my God, I didn't really think I was headed that way. But that's why it's really important to remember that's where this trip is headed. And in the case of New Orleans, you know, even though I might not see New Orleans for 99% of the trip, I'm already seeing signs, you know, past Atlanta. I'm starting to see signs of New Orleans, advertisements about all kinds of ridiculous things, and the casinos, and all of a sudden there's Spanish moss on the trees. You know, I'm aware that we're getting closer to New Orleans, and they start telling me how close I am, you know, 100 miles away. So, you know, I'm 54. I got a couple of those signs up there right now. You're this many miles away. Now, they're unreliable, though, and we'll get to that later, because the time of death is completely unpredictable. So just because you're 24 and I'm 54, you know, doesn't mean anything. But New Orleans is probably going to take me, you know, a day and a half to drive there, 15 hours to drive there, unless somebody picks me up in a helicopter. I can pretty much, or I have a flat tire or I die on the way. But I'm digressing. It's much more unpredictable. Death is much more unpredictable. Yeah. So the other important thing to meditate on when we're thinking about death, and I said it before in some ways, is that we're talking about impermanence. And impermanence doesn't mean end. Impermanence means just that river. It's just shifting. We can label something, you know, we can label this consciousness steep at one point, and then it shifts over here, and then we label it something else. That's impermanence. And once I was leading a talk on impermanence at the center, and we were meditating on it and how things shift. And this one guy, I really loved his question, because he did a lot of work with Shakespearean plays and literature. And so he was kind of upset because he said, you know, I spent all my time preserving Shakespeare, so you're telling me that it's going to end, that it's not worth it. And I said, no, I'm just telling you that, you know, it's shifting, because now we've got like... Oh, what's his name? I really like this actor. Oh, and he made this whole movie called Searching for Richard. It was really great. And I said, so now we've got, you know, Shakespeare on TV and people doing this Shakespeare and Shakespeare in the Park. And so it's shifted from what it started. And people are doing modern day Shakespeare. There was this one recently. They did a modern version of, yes, Much Ado About Nothing. Thank you. So that's what I mean. I don't know where it's headed, but it's not a waste of his time. The other thing to remember is that because of impermanence, Shakespeare was, all of his plays were written. If there wasn't something called impermanence, that would never happen. So the antidote when we feel gloomy about impermanence is to remember that things arise. So I spent a week at my uncle's house in D.C. a couple of years ago, and he's in his 90s, and my aunt had died, and everything in the house is like covered in dust and decaying, and it was really, it was really intense. And, you know, it was just, I was like a huge lesson in impermanence on that end of things. But I labeled that a huge lesson in impermanence rather than, I could have that same lesson on impermanence watching a baby be born, right? You know, but it was a gloomy lesson on impermanence, what I was experiencing. And so I was talking to Geshe-la about that, and I said, what's the antidote to thinking about impermanence in this kind of gloomy way? He said, to remember that things arise. So because of impermanence, things arise. If I had that kind of bird's eye view from the top of a building that I would have looking down on the Hudson River, if I had that kind of view and I'm looking in my uncle's house and he's 90-something and there's all this stuff falling apart, I could see where that river of my uncle Bob was going. And it wouldn't be so gloomy. It'd be like, okay, yeah, and then he's going to do this, and then he's going to become that, and then and then off we go into the ocean. But I don't. I'm just stuck in that little narrow view of his life. So one of the things to really try to recall during this week is that meditation on that things arise. So I want you're going to be paying attention a lot this week to impermanence and what is going apart, but also try to then use that antidote of what is arising or what can you imagine arising. So I want us all to take a minute to think about an object that you like, but don't, like, depend on. You know, it's not like something you're just so attached to. But I want you to think of some object in your house that you like. Maybe it's a favorite coffee mug. Something that you like. And we're going to do a meditation on the impermanence of that object. Okay? So we're going to tiptoe into all of this. We're not talking about anything other than, you know, a nice object. Again, don't pick one that's like this family heirloom that, you know, you just, you know, have been holding on to for generations. Work your way up to that one. Okay, so then get in a comfortable position. And close your eyes. And really in your mind's eye, see that object. Take a look at it from all sides. And think for a minute why it's so precious to you. What are some of the memories it's holding? Or what senses of yours does it please? Is it pleasing to your eyes or your ear? Or why do you like it so much? And then take a look at what I'm going to call the river of that object. So if it's a mug, take a look at all of its parts. The material that made it, if there's colors on it, you know, the paint, and think of all that went into making this object, the people who gathered the material, who then transported the material to some factory. All the people who transformed that material into the object, and then whatever else had to go into creating that object, packing it up, shipping it to a store, probably halfway around the world. People who unpacked it, stocked it, sold it, and how it then came to you. Think of all of these things. And then this is a river of this object, like the river of coffee mug. It has a future. So imagine the different futures, the different ways that this object will move on. Imagine yourself watching it break or become something other than what you covet at this point, and watch your mind. Can you be detached and say, there goes the coffee mug. There's the next bend in that river. Okay, and open your eyes. How'd that go? Good? No? What happened? I want my MTV. So you lost your iPod? What happened to it? Right. Here we go. You know why? Because people at home are listening.
I know, but...
Hey, look, I got to sit up here with this on. You can hold up a mic. All right, so your iPod broke.
I imagined that I dropped it and it just cracked the cross and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was special. See, it was. I still have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's special to me. My daughter sent that to me. And it was a birthday gift, and mm-hmm. it's engraved to mm-hmm. mommy, you mm-hmm. know, and all mm-hmm. of that. So, and it broke.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to the part about something else arising after it. Just,
mm-hmm.
It's just gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good question. You know, so that iPod is broken and gone, right? But what's not gone? Is there anything that's not gone? iTunes! She's still got her iTunes. yeah. No, that's very interesting. Yeah, it's up in a cloud, right? So, anything else? Her memory, the memory of her daughter giving it to her, the specialness of that, even though the engraving might be, you know, the thing that's carrying the engraving of it is gone, that memory of her daughter giving it to her, and the merit that her daughter got by giving her mother some happiness, all of that is in the cloud. You know, metaphorically speaking, that's not lost, right? Like I said, things come together, they make an impact, and then they go apart. It doesn't mean we're not going to be sad. You know, I remember this story I read about this teacher who was sitting down by a lake crying, and his student said to him, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "Because my friend died." And he said, "But you've been teaching us about death and impermanence and blah, 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 blah." And the teacher said, "I know, and I'm sad." You know, so it doesn't mean we're not going to be sad, but there's a difference between, there's kind of a different texture to the sadness, you know, when we know that there is going to be a moment when something kind of moves on. Either we're going to move on or the iPod's going to move on, you know. Something's going to, then we're not all going to stay together. So, anybody else with this meditation? So kind of, any experiences like that? Yeah. It might seem like a really kind of easy, trite meditation, but it's something, it's a starting point. Yeah.
Mine is a coffee cup that I love dearly, and I put it in the dishwasher a certain way, and often things are next to it that might crack it. And my first thought was, who broke it?
not me.
Right, right, right.
Could have been.
Okay, this is really good. It's really good. Because that is what's going to happen a lot, too, is, you know, it's somebody else's fault and because of that attachment. So, I mean, I think most of you know that Geshe-la lived in my house for about 9 years. And I remember one morning I noticed several mornings in a row there was this jagged, broken glass cup, and now glass, on our windowsill. And I just thought somebody had broken it and they were getting ready to throw it out, but it stayed there for like 3 or 4 days. So finally I asked Geshe-la, like, what happened with this? He goes, oh, that's there to remind me of impermanence. So, you know, I thought, wow, you know, so he's using these things, which I'm telling you, sometimes we think, oh, this meditation's kind of silly. I know that cups break. I know that things break. But you can't remember it enough, you know, and so sometimes as soon as I get something, I try to see it like that. Like, this is going to age. It is going to get a scratch and a dent and a this and a that. And no matter how much insurance I buy, you know, it's things are going to fall apart. Anybody else? Okay, so, you know, there's very traditional meditations on this topic of death and dying and rebirth. And we will do some of them, and you'll be reading about some of them. And they're all really, I don't know how to say this. You know, I do a lot of writing, and there's this book about writing from the right side of the brain. And one of the things that they say is that you have to kind of shift from this left side brain way of thinking to the right side. And when you make that shift, everything seems different. But in the meantime, part of you just doesn't want to do it. And you kind of, I know as a writer, you procrastinate, you just can't do it. And then finally, when you get in there, you're in a zone. I think the same is true for a lot of meditations. It's like I'll look at them and go, oh, this is so obvious. Why do I need to meditate on that? But once I can shut up and actually shift to that and do it, then I have this whole other experience. But it's like these different sides of me are kind of arguing, like, I know that, you know. So I'm just saying that in case anybody else is like me. So I'm going to list, because right now you don't have it, it's in your readings. I'm going to just talk about right now the 6 disadvantages of not remembering death and the 6 advantages of remembering death. We will do a more extended meditation on it at some point. Today's class, I feel like it's just an introduction for all of us to look at how can we start talking and thinking about death in a way that's not scary, you know, that's actually going to be beneficial to us. And then the next bunch of classes, we're going to do a lot more of the meditations on the death dissolution state. The third class, this is the first one, the third class, Venerable Renee, who's coming to teach, will be leading the class. So you'll have him here that time as well. And then, we're just going to keep on amping it up. But this is just kind of to get us comfortable with this whole topic. So the way to meditate on this is to first look at the disadvantages of not remembering death. And the first disadvantage is that you don't remember Dharma. If you're not recalling death, you don't remember Dharma at all. Just like if I wasn't recalling that I'm driving to New Orleans, I wouldn't even get on the highway. I wouldn't even know which highway to take, right? If I didn't recall that there's a test coming up, I wouldn't have my pen out right now. Okay, so that's like that. The second one is, even if you do remember Dharma and you're not recalling death, so even if you do remember, you won't practice it. So the first one is you don't remember Dharma if you're not recalling death. The second one is even if you do, you don't practice it. So say you don't have that death in your windscreen looking at it. You might remember Dharma, but you're not really going to practice it. It's just going to be an interesting thing, right? And even if you do practice it, you won't practice it purely. Okay? So without death as that kind of cold water on your face, you're not going to practice it as purely or as intensely as you will if you've got death there as a reminder. Yeah.
For example, when they find that the Dalai Lama,
uh-huh.
You have to relearn all of the teachings.
Okay. So,
or, I mean, how much of that is actually retained through compressions?
So his question was, you know, when the new Dalai Lamas are found, do they, how much, say
how much of the teachings of the sutras do they have to relearn?
Right.
Is it everything?
Or? Pretty much. But because there's so many positive imprints there from having to learn it having learned it so many times before, they learn it so much quickly. They learn it really quickly and excel usually in their studies. Like His Holiness just floored his teachers at his debate skills very early and got his Geshe degree very early compared to probably somebody else who hadn't had lifetimes and lifetimes of study.
Kind of like muscle memory of an athlete?
Yeah, probably so. You know, the imprints are so strong that the conditions come together. That's what all you have to do is pour a little bit of water if the seed is ripe and the conditions are ripe, and the plant will grow. But the teachings are like that water, that the person isn't just born with all of that intact. So, yeah, I remember asking that, too. It just seems so unfair. Like, my God, like, we have to do this every single lifetime. I got to study this all over again. Yeah, but it gets easier. So,
I actually had another question. In the Buddhism in a Nutshell text, toward the end of the chapter on Tantra, it mentions that it took the Buddha three countless eons. What's an eon? And the other thing is, when he came to the earth, he was a 10th stage bodhisattva. What does that mean?
Oh, yeah. So there's different stages of being a bodhisattva, different levels that you progress through to, you know, it's complicated, and so it's not just this, I'm a bodhisattva, now I'm done. And eons, that's really hard to describe. I can get more information for you. When I read different sutras about when they're describing eons, they make it this poetic description, which at first I just thought was this really long-winded way of saying anything, and then finally it kind of hit me after I'd read them and read them and read them, and they would say, like, if a bird had a silk scarf and flew across a mountain, they would have to fly however many times it took them to fly across the mountain with the silk scarf for the mountain to dissolve. That's an eon. And I think, what? But I kind of got it, because if you look at, like, the history of the earth and how long for it takes for a mountain to form or then to dissolve, I think that's what they're saying is like an eon. It's that long. But I'm going to ask Geshe, because Geshe and I were talking about this the other day, is there more of a round number I could give to people that's actually an eon? Or do I have to talk about the bird and the scarf? But it's a long time, and the whole... And so say the first thing that you said again about the eons.
Well, I was reading from the Buddhism in a Nutshell text. It said three great eons.
And what else did they say about that? Like, that's how long it took to...
It said, Lord Shakyamuni Buddha discovered enlightenment after struggling for three countless great eons.
Right.
When he came to the earth, he was a 10th stage bodhisattva.
Okay.
So, I mean, is that basically saying that since the history of mankind, he's the only one? The only Buddha and the only one who have completely escaped samsara?
No. But he is what's referred to as more the historical Buddha. But there's many, many Buddhas. It's a really complicated question and a very complicated answer.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There are many Buddhas who came before Shakyamuni Buddha. The Buddha who was just before him was the Nipankara Buddha. And the future Buddha who will come after him is called Maitreya. So you've seen many times statues of Maitreya. He's sitting in a chair with his legs down.
Right. Sure, and there could be Buddhas in this room right now. There's Buddhas, you know, there are many, many Buddhas. And you know, there's kind of like the short answer, and then there's really complicated answers to almost all of the questions in Buddhism. So I want to get you some more information on that, but I also want to kind of...
I guess I could email him, maybe Geshe will respond.
Yeah. I'm going to put my email address up here in a minute for anybody, because I think since we're talking about such a difficult topic, if anybody has any questions about this later or starts to feel uncertain about anything, I'd like you to feel free to email me, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can on that. And I'll definitely get you some more information, more things to read, because there's whole volumes of stuff written about what you're asking about. So I'm trying to also figure out what's the easiest way to answer this question and still get back to death. Okay, but, you know, is that information kind of discouraging when you think about three great eons? It took. Okay. So in the beginning, I used to feel incredibly discouraged by that. Like, oh man, I really thought that I could make some more progress, you know, pretty quickly. And then I remember I went to this teaching by the Dalai Lama, and what he said just totally changed my life. And I know I'm not going to be able to say it the way that he said it, but he was addressing that same thing, that he said, it may take that long for each of us. It may not. We don't know how long we've already been struggling. We don't know how long we've already been reading these things and meditating on these things, right? I mean, that's my commentary on it. We don't know how long. I remember Geshe-la saying something like, once you've done so many such and such prostrations or mantras or whatever, then this happens. And I go, but we don't know if I've already done that many from a previous life. And it was a good point. Really good point. So you just keep going. Even if you can't finish something, you don't know what it's adding on to from a previous life. You don't know what it's going to do for your next life. If you die in the middle of doing that, trying to accumulate that collection, what better way? You know, just die trying. I mean, I don't literally die doing a prostration, but I mean, so you don't reach that accumulation. So what you have, they don't disappear, because they are in your consciousness, in that river of consciousness we're talking about. So anyway, what His Holiness was saying was, it may take however many eons, but once you have bodhicitta, it won't matter to you, because every step of the way towards there, you're benefiting other people, and it will just be like you're moving from happiness to happiness. And so achieving bodhicitta is a little bit closer than, you know, the touchdown. So then, you know, every way that you're moving, you'll be benefiting others around you in your efforts, and you will move from happiness to happiness. It won't be just this a grueling, you know, Tour de France. You know? Okay. All right, so where were we? Number three. Okay, so four. Oh, yeah. Number three is, even if you do remember Dharma, even if you do practice Dharma, you won't practice purely. That's number three. Number two is, even if you do, you won't practice it. Number three is, even if you practice it, you won't practice it purely. You do not remember Dharma. Here's the disadvantage of not recalling death. Number one, you will not remember Dharma. Number two, even if you do remember Dharma, you won't practice it. Number three, even if you practice it, you won't practice it purely. Number four, your practice will not be persistent. Number five, you will create many unwise negative actions. And the last one is, you'll have regrets at the time of death. That's our goal, is not to. Number five is, you create many unwise negative actions. Okay, now the advantages. Did everybody get that? Number four is, your practice is not persistent. And also, these are in your readings. Okay, so once you look at the readings, they're in there. Okay, so now the advantages of recalling death. Your actions are very beneficial. Okay, just like if I recall that, you know, I might drive off the edge of the road, then my driving will be very careful. I'm not going to crash into anybody. It's the same kind of thing. If you remember death, your actions will be beneficial. So it doesn't say your actions are going to be gloomy and depressing. Your actions will be beneficial. The second one, your spiritual practice will be very powerful. Anybody read Carlos Castaneda? Some of us older folks. So he used to talk all the time about, you know, death being your advisor, and to have death just at arm's length away, because if you remember death, then your actions will be very powerful. So if you're choosing something thinking, this is my last act, what a powerful act that will be, you know. The third advantage is it's the importance at the beginning of practice. The importance at the middle of practice. And the fifth one is the importance at the end of practice. That you'll bring that importance, that powerful spiritual practice in at the beginning, the middle, and the end of your practice. And the sixth one is you'll die with a peaceful mind and no regrets. So these six disadvantages and advantages, you know, is something to meditate on this week. You know, start with the disadvantages and then move to the advantages. And see if there's other ways that you would phrase it, or other ways, when during the week does which one help? Okay? Because they're kind of like your toolkit. So all of this, as I said in the beginning, is about transforming our thoughts and our relationship with death. And if we can transform our thoughts and relationship with death, then we can help those around us, because, you know, we will be around our friends and family who are dying, and how do we want to help them? How are we going to be able to help them? That's usually something that motivates us much more than thinking about our own death, right? If you want to be comforting to somebody around you who's dying, it's going to be hard if you're not comfortable with the whole topic. So that's a good way to expand your motivation for even working on this. And if you feel comfortable around it, then it's going to make an incredible world of difference. You know, and most of us have had some kind of brushes with death some way or another. And I tell my story just to show you how possible it is to transform your thoughts about death. So I'll try to get through this. It's not fun, but I realize silence is not golden, so I try to talk about it a little bit more just to see if it's helpful for other people. So, yeah, when I was 14, I was abducted at knife point and told I was going to be killed for about 3 or 4 hours. Luckily, I wasn't. I managed to get away. But I had a profound fear of death for a long time. So it was like my own little personal movie I could play back over and over again. But it was not a good movie, right? So most of the time I just tried to not look at that movie, just tried to get through things. But there was a point where I realized I knew what it would feel like to have a bad death. A bad death is one where you are filled with fear or regret, where you are panicked. And what we're going to talk about is how that kind of negative mind state at the moment of death can propel you into negative next life. You know, if one thing follows another and your mind follows the mind state from before it, a negative death would lead to a negative intermediate state. So I really didn't want to have a bad death. And, you know, in my 20s and 30s, I took all these martial arts. I wanted to make sure this was never going to happen to me again. But I knew, ultimately, I cannot guarantee that I'm not going to be murdered. And then I just got lucky, and I found Gandhi's autobiography. And what he also wanted was to have a good death. And his whole goal was to be able to say the Hindu word for God when he died. And he was murdered. And he laid down and died and said the Hindu word for God. This changed my whole life, because I thought, here's somebody who did exactly what I'm saying I want to do, because I knew I don't have any guarantee I'm not going to be murdered. But here's somebody who actually was murdered and had a calm mind. It's possible. It's humanly possible to do that. I got to figure this out. So the next day I went to the library, Cameron Village Library, walked down the religion aisle just like hoping something would fall out, and I saw Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. I thought, well, that looks like it's going to address dying, so let me take it out. And everything then changed. So that fear of death, and having a fear of bad death, propelled my whole practice, which is why I'm saying that fear can be a positive thing. And the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying is what they're talking about extensively throughout the whole book, is how to have a positive mind state when you're dying. So what I'd like to do now is because everybody, you know, we all have some kind of... Is everything okay over there? Oh, okay. Is we all have some kind of experiences of death. And I think it's helpful to kind of, you know, you don't have to talk about them if you don't want to, but if you do and you want to just kind of sort out what parts are the heaviest for you, the hardest for you, what do you want to transform, what are your goals, it's really important to start off that class, this class for yourself, knowing where you want to go with this. All right, so how many people are in their 20s in this room? Nobody? There are no 20-year-olds in this room. All right. That's okay. No comment. How many 30-year-olds? Okay. How many 40-year-olds? Over 40. Okay, that's good. All right. So now the 30-year-olds, come over to this area. I know you're in here because you just raised your hands. you're not going to pick on anybody here. I'm trying to divide things up. Okay. Now, 40-year-olds, raise your hands. Okay.
In your
40s. In your 40s, how many were there? Okay, and then everybody else. All right. Well, we're going to have some leftovers. I want to try to get like 30, a 40, and over 40 in a group. Make sense? And I think we're not going to have enough 30s to make it. But here's what we do. okay, everybody here, I think this is the way I'm going to do it, is go pick two other people. Okay, so you go pick two people. It doesn't matter. They're all old. Just go and pick two other people. Everybody do that. You all go and pick two other people, and then just get in a group somewhere, and then I'll tell you what to do. Okay, it's not like, so don't feel bad if you don't get picked because there's not enough of them. Then you're going to have to pick from the leftovers. Just go and grab two people. Go and grab two people. Any of these two people sitting over here? Yeah, just go grab two people. I know it's silly, but you're just going to go find two people, and they're in your group. Two people sitting down. The whole purpose of this is I'm trying to mix up ages. Okay, and if there's anybody left over, then you're in your own group. There, this is a group of three. So right there behind you, you all are in a group. Okay, all right. Has everybody got a group? Anybody need somebody in a group? What about the guy in the back there? There's somebody, this guy in the back. We need one person more for him. Yeah. Right, that's... Well, we got him hooked up. Okay, we got everybody now, right? Everybody's in a group? Cool, I think. Okay, you're in a four. If you want to join, then they'll have three. Okay, so... You're just going to sit down. Just pick a chair. Okay, so now I want you, we only have a few minutes, like 15 minutes. I want you to take like 5 minutes each and talk a little bit about what you want to transform in your mind around this topic of death. Don't make it so heart-wrenching that you walk out of here feeling, you know, really emotional. Just what is it that you would like to share? And what is it that you're hoping during the course of this next 6 weeks to transform about your thoughts about death? You know, I wanted to get over this whole fear that I had and this fear of having a negative death. You know, what are some things that you want to talk about and make sure that you are working on during this time? Does that make sense? Okay, so go ahead and take some time. I'll tell you when you'll be about halfway through. Somebody try to keep your eye on the time so that each of you takes no longer than like 5 minutes. should be at least halfway through? Okay, and take a minute to finish up. And when you're done, just come back to your place. Okay, and finish your sentence and then come back to the larger group so we can finish up class. Thank you. So So it looked like everybody had a lot to talk about, and I just wanted to mix people up, so thanks for participating in that way of mixing you all. And that will be your little pod. If the same people are here next week, then, you know, I'll get you back together to kind of compare notes. That's your pod. And do you feel like you had some time to kind of identify things that you want to transform and work on? Okay, yeah. And just know that, you know, it is very possible to transform your thoughts and ideas about death. I am evidence of that. And also, the more I investigated death, the more I was definitely able to help people who I was kind of shepherding on the way. You know, my mother died a couple of years ago, and I was there the entire time. And because I knew the different stages, too, I was able to kind of figure out where she was in that process and what I should do and shouldn't do. And she had a very peaceful death, and I felt privileged to help her through that part of it. So, and it was only, I think, because of everything I'd been working on that I could do that. So, yeah. And my mother had dementia, so it was not really possible. But I'll talk about that later, about how do you talk to somebody who can't talk about where they're at, you know, either because it would scare them too much or they wouldn't really understand it. There's still things I think you can do. If the whole point is for people's minds to be calm when they're dying, there's all kinds of things you can do. You just take into account where their mind is and try to meet that rather than pull them over to your place, you know. So that's what I did. This is my email address. So feel free to, you know, email me, especially if, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh, gosh, I really don't like this topic or something, you know, and you want to talk about it. I will get to your email as soon as I can. How many people either have this book or are going to get it? Okay. You're not sure? Okay. If you have it or you're going to get it, then try to read the first two chapters in this before you come back. It's it'll give you a lot of information. If you're going to read the CD, then read the first two articles there. They're short, like 4 pages. And then what I'll do is try to have the people who read the articles meet with the people who read something from the book, and we'll kind of share information so that you're not reading both. Okay? But again, I really highly recommend this, and I know that he got more out there just for this class. And if you're also in the Death and Dying monthly class, then this will definitely come in handy. Okay? Also, throughout this week, what I think would be really helpful to do is not just meditate on the 6 advantages and disadvantages. I mean, definitely do that. But continue to meditate on impermanence and noticing the things that come together and go apart, you know, and that whole idea that just because they go apart doesn't mean it's an end, that something impacted, now it goes apart with that. So just kind of think about that. And the antidote to the gloominess of impermanence, play around with that. And what around you can you use to help you as a death meditation? Sometimes there's too much around us. You know, like I was describing my own life, I had to find something else. I didn't need any more. I had like my own little personal death meditation, you know, huge. So you might need to figure out something that helps you transform that. But if you're somebody who has a hard time trying to recall death, then what can you use around you to do that in a positive way? Again, like that broken glass. And then what around us in our culture seems to like cover it up? What discourages us? What's constantly there that's discouraging us from looking at this? You know, try to see that and try to see through it. And then I'm going to like look at just different things in our like our movies that are kind of fun and playful and light in this topic. Like I'm going to rent Death Becomes Her. I don't know if you've heard about that movie with Goldie Hawn and Is it? Okay. So it's going to play at the Carolina Theater for those folks at home who are watching this. And it's a great comedy, but it's on this whole topic of death. I remember when I was a kid, I saw the movie Death Takes a Holiday with Frederick March. And it's a really, really good movie. I don't know if you can even rent that anymore, but it's a really good movie. It's like death is a person, and he decides to go on holiday, and nobody's dying around the world. And it's pretty, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Black. I mean, Joe Black. Yeah. So, you know, kind of collect those for yourself, but also to share here so that there's some kind of fun ways to think about it. There's also, speaking of Brad Pitt, there's that Diary of a Vampire or Interview with a Vampire. You know, also vampires don't die, so you might want to look at that. And you know, kind of keep it light, but stretching your mind. Okay? Yeah, Wendy? Right. Right. So anything around you, just keep notes so that when you come back, you can share that with your pod and then with the larger herd here. Okay? Yeah, we're a herd. Okay, any questions or thoughts before we end? Okay. You've been great. So we're going to take a minute to just dedicate in our minds all the merit that we've created through coming here, the effort it took to get here, to think about and meditate and work on this difficult topic, to share our energy in such a positive way with the people around us. It's huge. And Geshe-la has asked us this week to dedicate any of the merit that we create to remove the obstacles for His Holiness coming to Raleigh to visit next year at this time. So that's one way that we can dedicate our merit. We can also dedicate the merit, in addition to that, we can dedicate it to helping us transform our minds in all kinds of ways, all the ways that you've identified and the ways that are still even beyond that, so that your mind can be transformed to the ultimate enlightenment, however many days, decades, eons it takes. That this merit will accumulate eventually to become a tsunami of merit, breaking down any barriers between us and complete enlightenment. And I hope to see you next week. Okay, thank you.